All right, troops.
Hello, and welcome to That Mental Ginger Show with your host, Andrew Durning, aka The Mental Ginger. Now, my three faithful followers, I did say we were going to step it up a level in version 2.0, and I'm very, very pleased to say that we have done just that. We have secured our very first international guest and someone of renowned stature, a rap artist, singer-songwriter, actor, model, blogger, journalist. I could go on and on and on, but I think it's probably best to let the guests do a little bit of the talking than me constantly bigging them up. Harmony. Is it Harmony or Harmony? We need to make sure with the pronouns here.
All good, my friend. It's Harmony.
Harmony. It is a privilege and an honor to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Ah, man, it's my pleasure to come on here, brother, and talk with you, man. It's good meeting you, and I like your personality, and I like what you're doing, brother. Hopefully, we'll get to do some more of this stuff.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Well, here is to more to come in the future. So for the listeners over on our side of the pond, tell us a bit about the man, the myth, the legend that is Harmony. Where did you start from? Tell us your origin story.
Sure, brother. Well, it's definitely been an incredible journey, full of ups and downs. And I think more than anything, you know, my life serves as a monument of inspiration to people, because I've beat so many odds that should have, you know, wiped me out or taken me out or prevented me from getting where I am. But I was able to conquer them. And if I can conquer them, anybody can conquer them. And so my story really derives from a city called Elmira in upstate New York. That's where I was born and raised for the first 20 years of my life. And, you know, it was kind of one of those environments where, you know, you're on welfare, you're on food stamps, single mom, dad's not there, you know, constant drug activity, traffic coming in and out of the house all the time, you know, lots of stabbings and shootings all the time there. You know, people were relentless in breaking into people's houses, and even our houses or our apartment. You know, we would come home from the store sometimes, from like the grocery store, and in broad daylight, there would be a bunch of guys in front of our door trying to break in our house in broad daylight. Like, it was just unreal. And when I was 15 years old, we ended up getting raided by the Elmira Police Department. My mom was, she was a good woman. She had a good heart, but she had a condition called Tourette syndrome. And it was something she had since she was a really little baby. And the marijuana helped calm her nerves, because Tourette syndrome is a disease that kind of attacks the nervous system. And so there's different, you know, things with that. But so my mom ended up meeting some people, you know, who introduced her to marijuana, and she tried it at the age of 18, and she noticed how it made her feel, and it brought her down and calmed her nerves. And so she began to use that as somewhat of a medication to try to, you know, stop the nervous tics, is what they call them. And so after smoking weed for, you know, some odd years, she was approached with an opportunity to begin selling drugs so that she didn't have to pay for drugs. And so that's kind of where that started. And 11 years later, my mom sold marijuana in heavy amounts with a team of her friends for 11 years, and then finally had gotten caught. One of my mom's friends ratted her out, because she had got caught with quite a bit of marijuana, and she ratted out the whole team because she was afraid. And so the next thing we know, there's, you know, police at our door, and that kind of wrapped that up. And then we moved out of there, and we went to a different apartment. And at that time, I was 15 years old when the first raid happened. And when we moved, I started getting into selling as well. And, you know, that didn't help the situation because I'm a people's person. So, you know, I knew a lot of people in the city. So the traffic at our new home was 10 times worse. It was like every moment somebody was coming in to buy. And that lasted for about 2 years. And then we got raided by the Elmira SWAT. So the SWAT team came in, kicked in our front door, broke through our back door at 9:30 p.m. Because of one of my friends had gotten caught with a lot of drugs, and they got scared and they ratted us out. They came into our home and bought drugs with a wire underneath their shirt. And that caused a raid in our home. And from there, you know, just getting started, you know, all the excitement of craziness. And so I ended up, you know, I was put on probation a lot growing up as a kid. I was really, I had a lot of issues as a kid. I developed Tourette syndrome when I was 10 years old from the medication Ritalin, which was given as a medication for kids with hyperactive disorder. And so, but for me, that medication actually did damage to my nervous system. And between that and probably some of my mom, you know, having it too, it actually brought out Tourette syndrome at a very early age for me, which, you know, was not easy as a kid because there was a lot of bullying. There was a lot of, you know, me having to be very defensive, a lot of massive anger and rage. And of course, I started doing drugs and those types of things at the age of 10. And from there, it spiraled down and from marijuana into cocaine and crack and mushrooms and acid and, you know, hard alcohol, liquor and animal tranquilizers, pills. I mean, the works, opium, Red Rock opium, Oxycontin. It just really spiraled out of control and ended up going to a lot of detention facilities as a kid. Was locked up most of my childhood, most of my teen years. And then when I got really hardcore addicted to Oxycontin, which is basically heroin in a pill form, I had gotten in some trouble. I gave a girl some of my Oxycontin and she got very sick and she, you know, went to get help because of how sick she got, which ultimately brought up my name and ended up having police at my door. And that is when I ended up going to jail, and then I was transported to a maximum state psychiatric prison, and that was crazy. So I did some time there, and 2 weeks before I got out of incarceration, my mother died from lung cancer. So she passed away in her mid-40s, you know, fairly young, and I went to go live with my brother. Because I really had nowhere else to go. And my brother is a pilot. He flies private jets for a living. And he grew up with me in the same home in the projects, Elmira, welfare, and all that. We just took two different paths. He went the path of wanting to become a pilot, and I went to wanting to become a drug kingpin and a rapper. And so we were both very good at our jobs. You know, I was selling a lot of dope and, you know, getting a lot of clientele and making a lot of money. And he was doing his thing and soaring in the sky. But you know, my path had to come to an end because it was destroying my family, my relationships, and me as an individual. It was ripping and shredding me apart. And so in 2005, I had crashed and burned again for like the 10th time. And at that time, I called out to God. Now, when I was a kid growing up, God was... People talked about God, but and I went to a school that they had a Bible class in the school that I went to for some years when I was in my younger years. And, you know, I went to the church bus would come and offer the kids candy to come to church, you know, bribing us or whatever. And I really went to church for the girls and for the candy. I didn't really care about God that much, but seeds were being sown into my heart and my mind, even though I didn't recognize it at the time. And as I went through the path that I went through that caused so much turmoil and stress and destruction, when I finally came to that tenth time of crashing and burning in such a terrible way, I called out to God in a way that I just hadn't before. It was a different heart posture. All the other times it was, you know, save me and get me out of jail and I'll stop being bad. You know, get me out of this trouble that I've gotten myself in and then I'll be good type thing. And, you know, I never kept my end of the bargain, even though there was time, a lot of times when I never paid the full penalty for my crimes. I either got a much lesser sentence or I didn't get a sentence or prison time or jail time turned into like some community service. Like there was things that God was actually doing on my behalf, but I wasn't thinking of it as God doing it. I just thought it was happening. I kind of forgot the deal I made, but he didn't forget. And so when I finally came to that place of crashing and burning, I called out to him, but this time I called out to him from a place of genuinely wanting to change. It wasn't a hey, get me out of this issue I got and I'll do good. It was more of a prayer and a conversation that was, I need your help. Like I'm dying. I'm letting my mom's dead. You know, my brother can barely handle me. I have a child on the way. You know, I'm addicted to all these drugs. I have no life. I have no future. I'm sick. I'm paranoid. I got so many issues. And if you don't step in to help me, I'm not going to make it. I'm going to die. So I really need you to help me. And whatever it is that you got to do, I started naming stuff. I was like, if you need to make me get in a car accident and burn my skin off so that I get humble, if you need me to lose my arm or lose my leg or something dramatically terrible needs to happen to me in order to do it, I said, I give you my permission. Do whatever it is that you need to do so that I can break free from this life that I've been living, because I don't want to be this person anymore. And that got his attention, needless to say. And before I knew it, I felt the most powerful presence in the room where I was at. It was a presence I'd never felt before, not to that magnitude. I may have felt it in church, you know, growing up and things, but I didn't really understand what I was feeling. It was like peace and love and maybe joy, but I didn't understand it as the presence of God. But this time it was an undeniable presence because I was waving my hand in the air like this, and I could feel the tangible presence of the Creator. Like it was a whole different level. And so I'm pushing in the air and I can feel. And the only way I can describe it is if love was tangible, it was love made tangible. And it just covered my body, my face and my neck and my fingernails and my chest all the way down my legs and my feet. And I just began to cry very, very, very loudly because that was the first time in my entire life that I knew God actually cared about me. And you can't compete with that feeling. You can't compete knowing when you finally come to the realization that the God that you think hates you because you're always lying, you're always cheating, you're always stealing, you're always doing drugs and you're getting in trouble and all these things that, you know, you're brought up to think God hates. You feel distant and you feel like you could never please him and it's just impossible. So when he actually came into the room at the magnitude that he did, it caused me to become so overwhelmed that the only response I could give was a loud wailing, a loud crying. And from that experience, a ripple effect of things began to happen. The first thing that happened was my drug addictions became powerless against me. Drugs that I struggled with since I was 10 years old, all of them, eight of them. I was addicted to cigarettes. I smoked 3 packs of Newports a day. I was smoking a quarter pound of marijuana a day. I was snorting insane amounts of cocaine, smoking crack, eating mushrooms, Oxycontin, alcohol, and meth. I was doing all of those drugs at the same time consistently. And of course, you can imagine where my brain was scrambled and just so jacked up. And
surprised you had a brain, in all honesty.
Man, you and me both, brother. You and me both, because you know, I don't know if you've ever done any of that stuff, but or known people who have. But
I think you would find rulers that are less straight than me in comparison. I mean, your story is already. I'm starting to think that you should get it made into like a movie, and then it'll win like multitudes of Academy Awards because people seem to love suffering. If you look at films like Schindler's List, Boy in Striped Pajamas, people love pain. Well, that's actually hurt my soul listening to that. Well, just hearing how hard it was for you, and at such a young age as well. And especially, we'll talk about the Tourette's very briefly, because a lot of people see Tourette's in the media as, you know, it's a swearing disease. Like that's the tick. The word that's kind of always been made popularized. But we know obviously that's not the case. What was your mum's tick, if you feel comfortable talking about it? And what was your tick?
So just to clear up the media lies and just what people, you know, try to portray. There is a portion of Tourette's where a person may blurt out cuss words or something like that uncontrollably. Mm-hmm. But the majority of people that have Tourette's don't do that. What Tourette's is, in the simplest form, is it's like your body has a certain amount of energy, right? Your brain has a certain amount of energy. And in your mind, in that energy, you make decisions, you move your body, you do things. I take off my glasses, I put on my glasses, I lift my hand, I put my hand down. I'm using brain power and energy in my mind to do the things that I'm equipped and able to do. Tourette's is an overload of energy that causes, instead of me choosing to do something with my body just does it. Because there's an overload of excess energy that spurts out into either my eye or my eyes blinking or maybe, you know, some people have like head jerks where they go like this, then it can become a habitual thing to where these tics they really become triggered by stress, fear. It's kind of funny when I think about it and I talk about it, because all the things that trigger the tics of Tourette stem from all of the things that the devil tries to put on human beings. Stress, fear, frustration, anxiety. And in the Bible, God always says, don't be anxious for anything. 365 times in the Bible, it says, do not fear. One for every day of the year. So it's amazing when we get into talking about it in that realm. But for my mom had a tic that was like a turning of the head like this, kind of over to the shoulder. And she had blinking her eyes a little bit and moving her mouth a little like over to the side. The marijuana I did see a difference in it calming her down. So, you know, when people talk about drugs and, you know, things of that, I knew my mom personally, and my mom was that kind of woman who would give the shirt off her back for a stranger. I mean, she died with most of her friends owing her money, you know? So, she was just that person who give and give and give. And if a kid hurt themselves, they knew to run to my mom. My mom would be there with Neosporin and a Band-Aid. If they were hungry, my mom fed them. It was my mom was the community nurse. She was the community friend. And a lot of people took advantage of that. But there was other people that, you know, really loved her for that. And so that's kind of that with my mom. With mine was more of the eyes. I had the blinking in the eyes. And then I had like vocally, but not cussing. It was like, I'd usually do that, or I'd go like that. Now, most of those over the years, just because when I got saved in 2005, when I had that dramatic, overwhelming encounter with the Creator of all things, Christ began to heal a lot of broken things in my life, a lot. One of the biggest things was setting me free from the drugs, you know, which was amazing to a lot of people around me because they knew how I grew up. They knew I'd been in jail. They knew I'd been in drug programs. They knew I'd been to rehab. They knew all of the doctors and the psychiatrists and all of the stuff, man, that I went through that was there to try to get me off of those things. And none of them worked. None of them were able to free me from the bondage of those addictions. Then I have one real, genuine encounter with the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And in less than 2 months, no more crack, no more cocaine, no more cigarettes, no more Oxycontin, no more meth, no more shrooms, no more cigarettes, no more alcohol. From May 05 to July 05, I had the most massive deliverance that people couldn't even grasp with their own brain. And I'd been free from drugs and alcohol and all that stuff from that time. And so because I got rid of the drugs and alcohol out of my life, that helped me not be so crazy, you know, not so stressed and anxious. And, you know, I'm driving my car always. Are the police behind me, you know, peeking through my door? Are the police out front? Like always, you know, looking on the floor, the little white piece of linen, is that crack? Like, let me tell you what, brother. So we got into a lot of that, man. And
That's absolutely amazing. That's such such a powerful story, especially like you're coming to the Creator essentially. Last year, I took a bad breakdown. Not as bad as like, you know, the way your lives went, but it was the same deal. I thought there was kind of no way out, and as well as like my family being the thing that pulled me through. It was that faith actually got me through. I wasn't one that really grew up with faith. Because I got told because I had red hair and I was left-handed that I basically had a condo next to Satan. And I got told this when I was like six, and I was like, yeah, okay, that's a bit. I don't get why. What? And I was like, what type of God would does somebody because of their hair color or what hand they write with? So I kind of gave up on it at that point. But then when I had my breakdown, I was separate from my family. I genuinely thought there was no way back. And it was a good friend of mine, Scott, who I worked with. And he was talking in like one of the kind of group sessions about, you know, his encounter with God and coming back to Christianity. And I just messaged him and said, I need help. I'm at my lowest point. I'm separated from my kids. I don't know if I'll see them again. And I need something to help me get through. And we started doing some Bible study. And I've got my own Bible that I keep at my bedside every night. You know, prayers every night. I may not be very active follower because let's face it, lockdown, we couldn't get to the churches or anything at that point. But I still. I've my face a lot more rock solid now than it was throughout my entire life. And that's not anywhere near as bad as what you went through. Everybody's journey is different, and it's special to them. I totally understand that. And it's made you who you are. And wow, what a person you have become. Now, how did you go from you got your spiritual realization, in 2 months you're cleared of practically every addictive substance under the sun. Did the Tourette's start to kind of come into control, or is that more manageable?
Very much so. I mean, I was taking all kinds of medicine, you know, to try to calm it. They had me on the most I've taken so many pills over the years, man, for that. And the best the best version of me and being having Tourette under control and very manageable happened when I simply came to Christ. I don't take no medicine, bro.
Wow. That's absolutely.
And I mean, look, like you can look at me right now.
Yeah.
I'm just me.
Yeah.
Now, if I start getting under a lot of stress or crazy pressure, then some of those tics will begin to surface. But it's one of those things, man, where the majority of my life, I have peace. Mm. You know, and I think it's kind of funny, you know, thinking about your story a little bit, like, you know, you said being left-handed and being a redhead. And I think of, you know, in the Bible where it tells us straight up, God is the one who knits us together in our mother's womb. Mm-hmm. He's the one who creates us. So why would God hate you or look down upon you or frown upon you because you were left-handed or had red hair when he's the one who made you with red
hair?
Exactly. The one who gave you. Like, that's so – it's just the enemy is so – he tries to be slick, bro. And the issue is when we don't understand what God's word says, when we don't know the truth, we're easily distracted and we're easily conned into believing lies. And so, you know, for people that, you know, even might see this and might, well, I don't believe in God, or I don't know if there's really a God, you know, the reality is it's harder to not believe in God than it is to believe in God. Because when you just step back and look, you got every seed bearing plant. That's in Genesis. God said, I created every seed bearing plant. You know, us as human beings, God literally put you think over billions and billions and billions of years that slime, well, actually nothing exploded, because that's evolution, that nothing exploded, and over billions and billions and billions of years, we became these human beings with arms and legs with only one fingerprint per person, a defense mechanism called an immune system that is inside of us that fights against viruses and fights against things that would try to come against us. You think billions and billions of years caused that? The rain that comes down from the sky and falls and waters the trees and the grass and the fruits of the land, and then it grows so that we can eat and have substance. And people, like, to me, it takes way more faith to not believe than to believe. And what I've understood, you know, in my walk with God, is that God is actually very easy to communicate with. He's not a person, he's not an individual who's going to scream over other people. So if we want to hear the Lord, we need to make the choice to obey him and to follow him. And if we'll take the time to read his word and talk to him, if we'll communicate with God, even if we don't at first understand what his voice sounds like, because God's voice is the voice of truth. It can never be combated. His voice is the voice of truth. And whether that truth sounds like you, whether it sounds like the voice of your dad, whether it sounds like the voice of your mom or your kids, if it's truth, it's the voice of God. And God can speak to us in 100,000 different ways. He's God. But the way that we get hit, the way that we more and more begin to understand when God is speaking to us is by reading his word. Because the more that we read the word, which is God's truth, that word begins to come in our mind and in our heart. And with that way, when God wants to say something to us, the Holy Spirit can quickly bring to our remembrance what we've read. So we may be going through something in a day and, you know, dealing with something, and then the Holy Ghost will just be like, be not afraid, for I am with you. I will never forsake you. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa, like you hear God speaking to you and encouraging you. And he's actually very active in our lives every single day. But we get so distracted by TV and entertainment and people and job and work and family that most of the time we don't even slow down to recognize how God is literally in our everyday life interacting. And so he's very real. And if anybody was to ever question that, I always tell them, no matter what you were grown up to believe in, if you were grown up to, believe in Muslim or Buddhism or whatever the case is, I always tell people straight up, I was like, if you really want to know if God really exists, and I'm talking about the real God, I'm talking about the God that raises the dead, the God who breathes and things come to life. If you want to know that God, start talking to him. Ask him. Say, Jesus, I'm going to need you to reveal yourself to me. I need you to show me who you are. And whatever it is that needs to happen, give him permission. Whatever it needs, to happen, anything across the board, to make me understand and truly know that you are the one true God, do it. Show me. I'm giving you permission to do what you start talking like that. Man, God's going to start showing up. Now you're going to start seeing things, and you know, things are going to start happening where your mind, your spirit is going to begin to understand and begin to see things that God is showing you. But when that happens, you cannot be like, oh, that was a coincidence. Because the mind can continuously dismiss what God does. You can constantly be a realist. You can be like, oh, well, that was a happenstance. Yeah, I might have asked God to do that. But then when it happened, it just happened because by chance it wasn't him. Oh, really? Well, you asked him, didn't you? Like, people can get in that mindset where they dismiss God doing things on their behalf or in their life based on, you know, chance or happenstance or whatever. But the reality is God is very active, and it takes way less to just open our eyes to see him at work than it does to not believe in the creator of all things. But yeah, man, so that's kind of the rundown in that.
So let's go from what you've had your very powerful spiritual awakening, and I was just letting you talk because I felt like I was sitting in like one of the, you know, the really cool churches there where, like, you know, they encourage the audience participation. I was like, I just want to start getting up and going like, amen, brother. I'm just starting to feel that. I'm like, man, this is getting channeled through me, man. I didn't think I had a soul. So you start starting to embrace who you are as a person, and then you start creating through your music and through entertaining. How did that come about? From was that something that was maybe there, maybe bubbling under the surface when you were younger, but just the circumstances got in the way, and then after things were clear, you were able to finally follow the passions? Like, talk me through your creative process as well as your religious process and how they intertwine. Because they intertwine quite a lot in your work. And it's damn good work, I gotta say. I mean, I love your song, Champion, by the way. It's fantastic. It's absolutely beautiful. Love it.
Thank you, brother. Yeah. I mean, as much as you can promote that over there and do that, that would be great, man. You know, in the journey, it's very powerful, bro. And we're going to lead up to some things that I hope really encourages anybody who listens to this. When I started doing rap music, let me back up. When I was growing up as a kid, you know, I was molested at 7 years old by a stranger, a guy in our neighborhood who molested me. And, you know, that spiraled off into shame, guilt, and all this stuff. And ever since I was a kid, I always loved the sound of harmony. I always felt almost like a healing substance. I noticed when people would hear people singing together in harmony or whatever, like, you know, they thought it sounded good. But for me, it was way deeper than that. Yeah. It would go into the bottom of my soul. And I just felt this connection, this vibe, man, that was just so real and so deep. And anyway, when I used to really listen to boy bands more than I did rap music when I was when I was young. I loved them.
What was your favorite boy band? I've got to ask.
Oh, man, it had to be between there was a couple of that I continuously, I loved Boys to Men. I loved NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. I just, man, those guys shaped my childhood. And
again, the harmonies as well. There were some, especially Boys to Men, some sensational harmonies there.
They just were something else, man. I don't know. I just looked up to those guys so much, and I always wanted to be like that. And there came a time when I was about between 10 and 11 years old when, you know, I started doing drugs. And the one of the kingpin, you know, drug dealers in my city at that time, he was a white guy who rapped, and he was very good at rapping. He was very good at selling drugs. He had money and he had respect. And when I would go to his house, a lot of times he would be, he'd have instrumentals on and he would be freestyling and rapping with other guys that were there with him. And I would go there when I would go to buy weed and just get those, that stuff. I would sit down kind of, man, almost like a student with their master. Like I'd sit at the feet of these guys and I would just watch them. And I noticed how they had money and like girls and just people respected them. And they just seemed so cool and like, man, I wanted that so bad. And so I ended up coming into a relationship to where I began to sell drugs with that individual. And I began to develop more of a passion for rapping. And so I began to write down raps and I'd get instrumentals and I'd try to freestyle. I'd ride my little bike around the city and I'd be like, tree, bee, come and see me, guns, buns, you know, I just, anything I could do, words. And I would just practice every day, every day, every day. And eventually I developed this, it was more than just a talent, because talent is something that you do well, but when you have a spiritual gift for something, that gift changes the atmosphere. There's a, it's really more or less an anointing. It's a divine presence upon you that when you do this particular thing, it changes what emotions and feelings and the aura rather in the atmosphere. And so I kept going with rap music and I began to get really, really good at it. And then when I got saved in 05, rap music was the only thing that I had to offer God. I didn't have anything else. I had never had a real job, not even McDonald's. I didn't graduate high school. The only thing I knew how to do was sell drugs and rap. And obviously as a believer, I couldn't keep selling drugs and doing drugs. So the only thing that I had to offer God as a tool to influence people for him was rap. And so I gave him my gift and I told him, I said, I'm going to stop cussing. I'm going to stop, promoting the things that I know you don't want me to promote. And I'm going to use it as a tool to, you know, either preach your word or encourage people or influence people to recognize that there really is a devil, that there really is a God, that there really is a heaven, that there really is a hell, that there really is an invisible force pulling us to do wrong. And so after I committed that to God, I began to execute my promise. And that began to open up doors for me. I clicked with some guys in a church that I still go to this day. And we developed a music group in the church called Lyrically Sound. And what that group was, it was based, because our church was big. We're talking like, 10,000 members. It's very difficult to personally interact with, one-on-one people, because there's so many, you can get lost in a place like that. And you can have all these people around you, but feel alone. And so what the church did is they created small groups and other programs to where what was really, really big on Sunday came down to life size, where you could touch and feel and communicate with people. And so we decided we were going to create a group like that with the permission of the church. And we did, called Lyrically Sound. And what it was it was a group where rappers and singers and producers and anybody in music, arts, and entertainment that was in our church that wanted to connect with others that had a same passion, they could come to our group. And what we would do is we would meet once every 2 weeks, twice a month. We would get together with all the rappers and singers and people that came to part of the group, and we would pray. We would fellowship. We'd talk about what we had going on in our life. We'd break bread. We'd eat some food. And then
we would read a section of scripture. We'd read like a chapter, basically. And then we would talk about the chapter we read. What did it mean to us? What did we get from it? You know, a Bible study, basically. Hmm. But we would only do it on that one chapter. And then after we were done, it was the responsibility of the producers to produce an instrumental track that they would give to the rappers and singers. And the rappers and singers' responsibility was to take that beat, go home, and write a rap based on what we learned off the chapter we read, 16 bars, bring it back the next session, and present it to the group.
Wow.
We did that for over a year. And while we were doing that, God's presence always showed up. We were washing our mind, and we were all growing in the word, but we were also sharpening our talent and gifts at the same time. It was very healthy and very cool. And so once we got past about a year and a half of doing that, you know, a lot more doors started opening up for me. I did a lot of outreach ministry. I'd go out to like the homeless, and I would rap for them, and I would minister to them, and I'd tell them my story, and I'd pray for them, and I'd serve them food and give them clothes and, you know, things of that nature as a rap artist. Mm-hmm. And I did that for, you know, several years. And one of the guys that ran one of those outreach events, he used to do a lot of things with Johnny Cash, Tim McGraw,
wow,
Van Halen. Like, there was a lot of guys in the secular world that he did a lot of promotion and bookings for, mm-hmm, as an agency. And then he got saved and all this stuff, you know, and then he became, you know, a minister. But he would always watch the artists, the upcoming artists that would come out, and you know, just, you know, anyway, he was drawn to me. And we ended up developing a really good relationship, and eventually he offered me an opportunity to become my manager. And so he became my manager, and, you know, he began getting me bookings, and you know, I started learning some things. But he was also very overweight, which the heaviness of his, you know, physical condition prevented him from doing a lot of the things that he used to be able to do, you know, when he was booking and doing things for the agency with all those, you know, megastars in the secular realm. And so even though he was doing some things for me, there was a lot more that could have been done. And but we stayed together. We stayed together for about 8 years until 2018. And in 2018, I had the most wild experience. There was a lady who was 78 years old, the same age as my grandmother.
Right.
And her name was Barbara, the same name as my grandmother. And this lady, you know, backing up a little bit, my grandmother, before she died, my mom died on October 12th, 2003. And my grandmother died just a couple years after that. And those were the two most important women in my life. They were my rock. They were my everything. And
did your grandmother die just before your spiritual awakening, or just after?
Just after.
Just after.
Yeah, she died in 2006.
Just for the timeline in my head.
Yeah, 2006 as she passed away. My mom died in 2003. I got saved in 2005. So she got to witness about a year or so of my, you know, my awakening and coming to Christ, and she was overjoyed. She loved it. It blessed her so much, because she prayed for so many years and it just seemed so hopeless. And when I was converted to Christ and I had that experience, a lot of people were having a hard time believing it. Because I used to be so evil. I was so bad. It's like taking, you know, Ted Bundy or freaking Jeffrey Dahmer, who's eating people and you know, oh, I'm saving. I got God. And they're like, yeah, right. Mm. Like, you know, a lot of people weren't able to really catch on. And so I just had to, you know, believe in my heart. I knew what was going on. And, you know, eventually people caught wind and they began to see that it wasn't going away. That my spiritual awakening with Christ was actually, it didn't just happen, but it was continuing. day after day, week after week, year after year, it was affecting the way I was thinking. It was affecting my behavior, my choices, and it was helping me become a better man, a better father, a better husband, a better friend, a better businessman, you know, and all these things. And so, but yeah, so my grandmother, before she died, she gave my brother $40,000 for flight school. My grandmother was not poor, even though my mom and us were. My grandmother and her husband, they had a really nice house and things, and they did help us. You know, they helped us with Christmas presents and anything my mom needed, my grandmother would step up because she loved her daughter, you know. But me and my brother went on two different paths. You can't give a drug dealer 40 grand. You know, you can't give somebody like me that money because it's going nowhere fast. My grandmother ended up saving up $5,000 for me. And when I got out of prison, my brother gave me the money.
And in 30 days, it went up my nose with cocaine.
30 days,
$5,000
gone. Nothing to show for it. Yep. And my grandmother gave my brother $40,000 to help put him through flight school, which was, you know, a good thing. And, eventually my grandmother died in 2006.
We fast forward to 2018. I had my awakening with Christ. I've been committed. I've been growing. I've been learning, you know, falling on down on my face sometimes, but getting back up, knowing that I know the truth and knowing that I know God loves me, regardless of what I feel on the inside that Satan might try to tell me or whisper in my ear, or, you know, try to put together in my head, if God loved you, then why did this happen? If God loved you, why would he let this happen? Or why would he do this? You know, all the things that Satan tries to convince us not to believe and trust God. But I knew what happened to me, and I stayed the course. 2018 rolls around, and there's a lady named Barbara, who is 78 years old. My grandmother, Barbara, passed away at 78.
And at first, I didn't
really connect the dots. I didn't see anything, you know, coincidentally with it. It was just like a lady named Barbara.
I recognized her. She had my grandma's name, and I recognized she was the same age. But that was kind of where it ended, until
that lady contacted my manager and said she wanted to take me out to dinner and have a meeting with me. And, you know, all right. I thought at first it was a little odd, kind of weird that a lady at that age,
I'm a complete stranger to, wouldn't want to have dinner with me or whatever. But I accepted the invitation. I was like, okay, I'll go, you know, chat with her or whatever. I go and I meet this lady at a restaurant called Bluebies.
And we sit down and we're eating and we're talking. And I had no idea what I was really stepping into. This lady actually used to hang out with Tupac. And she used to hang. It was you just never would have thought. This little lady, redhead, by the way. Super
we
cool.
We got all the great connections. What can I say?
I'm trying to tell you, you guys are amazing, man.
Run the world, man. Run the world.
You do. There, so you know, the world.
Miss Tupac. Well, let's get back to Miss Tupac. I am so intrigued by this. You know, what makes me so jealous with this story?
Yeah. So it was very crazy. Like she was telling me like memories and things that she had as a girl growing up and weird situations that she would find herself in.
Yeah.
She went to Woodstock and all that crazy stuff, but she ended up meeting Tupac and was hanging out with him at some of the mansions and the places where he would go and hang out at, and, you know, had conversations with Tupac. And she said, I actually, you know, she said, most people wouldn't think that I had any kind of liking to rap music because of my age. And most older people don't really like rap music because it, you know, they don't really dig the cussing and the swearing and the degrading of women and the crimes and the evil that a lot of it's portrayed. But she said, I'm not your average 78-year-old lady. I actually do like rap music, and I grew up listening to Tupac and hanging out with him. And, you know, when I came across your music, I was so blessed because I thought to myself, here's a young man whose life has been changed by God, and he's using his music for the good. He's not like other rappers. He's not, there's no cussing in his music. He's not, you know, promoting drugs and promoting violence and all this stuff. It's a very unique style. And the way that he's doing it is actually getting the attention of the youth. And I like that. And so she said that was why she wanted to talk to me. She wanted to have that meeting so she could learn more about me in person and get a feel for who I was. Mm-hmm. And we had that meeting for about 3 hours. Okay. After the meeting was over, she said, Harmony, would you please pray us out, pray us out of our meeting? And I said, sure, you know, and I reached out my hands and she put her hands into mine and locked them. And I bowed my head and I be, you know, Father, in the name of Jesus, Lord, I just thank you so much for this meeting. I thank you for Barbara and I just pray your blessings upon her. And I thank you for, you know, the time that we got to spend together. I thank you that your presence was here and whatever it is, Lord, that you want to do in our lives, you know, continue to do it. I pray your healing touch, you know, in Barbara's body. If there's anything that she's dealing with, you know, in her elderly age that might be hurting her, you know, that you would deliver her from that. And I was just praying, bro, you know. And amen, after brother. After I had concluded the prayer and said amen, we began to get up out of our booth at the restaurant and, you know, proceeded to put on our jackets to get ready to go. And a waitress from across the room started walking over across the room in and out throughout the tables until she got to our table, our booth. And she said, sir, I'm sorry to bother you, but I just wanted to tell you that I saw you praying from across the room. I was over here waiting a table over here, and I looked over and I saw you praying with that woman. And as I began to watch you pray, I could feel God's presence right where I was standing. I don't know you and I don't know what you're doing here, but whatever you're doing, keep going and don't give up.
Wow.
And she walked off. And I went home that night, woke up the next morning to a phone call from my manager at that time. Mm-hmm. And he said, hey, how are you doing? I said, I'm doing good. How are you doing? And he said, I'm good. The reason for my call is I wanted to check on you and see how your meeting went last night with that lady. And I said, well, I think it went really good. You know, she was a nice lady. You know, Barbara, 78 years old, kind of an elderly lady, but she had a really great story. She used to hang out with Tupac. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, I didn't expect some of her story to come forth in that manner. But, you know, I think, overall, we hit it off really well. She asked me a lot of questions about my life and shared, you know, hers. And I said, it was a very unique meeting out of all things. And then I told him about the prayer at the end. I said, and I said, the most craziest thing happened, you know, at the end of our meeting, you know, I prayed and explained what the waitress did and came and said and all that. And, you know, and I said, but, you know, overall, I think it was a great meeting. And he said, huh, well, she must have really, really liked you, Harmony. And I said, well, why do you say that? He said, well, I got up this morning with a request for my bank information from Barbara. And I sent it to her because she said that she wanted to send a little gift for you. And the next thing I know, I get an alert that $40,000 had just been transferred into my account with your name for your music.
What? Of all the numbers as well? Of all the numbers that could have been put in? Well, there's literally hundreds of millions of numbers could have been put in. For
any other number, it was 40,000 to the T. The same exact number my brother was given from my grandmother, Barbara, who passed away at 78 years old.
That is crazy.
Okay.
Did you hear from the woman after that? Barbara?
Yes. Yes. So that spirals on to bring you to kind of where I'm at now in life.
Right. Okay.
So
that's a good segue.
Yeah. No, we're on it, man. So the first couple months after that money was transferred, in talking with my manager and all that, you know, he made a lot of, you know, executive decisions on what he felt we should do with the money. And so we spent about $20,000 in about 3.5 months. Whoa. We did music videos. We did marketing material, flyers, yeah, upgrades on our website, photo shoots, recording, mixing, mastering. I mean, we did quite a bit, you know, with the first 20,000. And then we had an outstanding balance from someone who had did some video editing. I think it was like maybe $1,200 that needed to be paid, and it wasn't paid. And so, you know, I contacted my manager and I said, hey, did you notice we still have this balance here that we need to pay this person off? You know, they did the work, they need to be paid. And he's like, Oh yeah. Sorry, man. I've been busy and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'll get that done right away. Okay, cool. Thank you. A couple weeks go by, not paid. Hit him up again. Hey man, what's the deal? You gonna pay this thing or what? Oh man, I'm so sorry, bro. I keep getting sidetracked. Okay, I will definitely have this done. I got it on the agenda. It's on the calendar. I'm knocking it up. Okay, cool. Make sure you get it done. We need to pay this guy. He did the work. A couple months go by, I find out, not paid. January rolls around of 2019, and I'm pretty upset at that point. Because, you know, I believe that if you do a service for someone, or you just don't play with people's money, man.
No, definitely not.
Ever do that. You owe somebody money, you pay them. If it is in your power to give what needs to be given, you give it at that moment. You don't make people wait. You do not play with people's money, man. I'm so head over heels on that. It's just, it's
the only thing I ever agreed with in Game of Thrones from the Lannisters, that they always repaid their debts. That's the only thing I ever agreed about from the Lannister side. And it's true, but that's something that you don't mess with.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely not. And so, you know, I called him, and this time I was really kind of aggressive. I was like, listen, you need to tell me what's going on. I was like, because this balance has been outstanding for like 3.5 months. And I was like, you told me several times that you were going to pay this balance. Like, why haven't you paid it? What is going on? And he began to kind of break down and was getting upset and apologizing. He was like, Harmony, I'm so sorry. You know, I meant to tell you, but I thought you would get mad. And, you know, I had a plan in place that I thought was going to work. And, you know, everything just fell through the ground. And I said, what are you talking about? He's like, well, I spent the rest of your money, your $20,000, on some personal debt that I had.
What?
Yeah. And I was hoping that, you know, I could use it and get it back in there before you noticed. And my plan to get it back failed. And so I don't have any of that money anymore. And I don't really see a way as of now of recouping it. And that was very distressing, to say the least. It was very, it hurt. Betrayal, all the feelings, you know, and he's asking me to pray for him and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, can you please pray for me, brother? Cause I'm going through this and that, and, you know, please forgive me and this stuff. And I'm in the moment, I don't really want to talk to him. I don't even want to say another word to him, because you lied to me, man. You lied to me. You stole from me. You went behind my back. You betrayed me. You did all that with a clear conscience at the time, clearly. And now all of a sudden that you got caught, that you're backed in a corner, now you're deciding to tell me. And I said, you know, I told him, I was like, you know, I'll pray for you, man. And I'll pray God, you know, fixes whatever there. But you do realize, like, I cannot submit under your authority as as an artist anymore. I was like, this is where our relationship industry-wise is terminated. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so I prayed with him, all that stuff. And you know, our communication became less and less. And, you know, until it pretty much just faded out to where, you know, I mean, we do still talk occasionally, but it's like once every 7 or 8 months, if that. It's very seldom.
Have you ever had any of that money back?
No.
Wow.
No. And you know, it's okay. I'm not at this point. I'm not angry about it. I'm, you know, I've forgiven the situation. Mm-hmm. You know, God had to really deal with me on that. But he did. And I, you know, I got perspective, you know, I didn't have the money to begin with, you know, that was a gift from God that he gave to me. Mm. And I, you know, the lady who had gave it to me, she had, you know, we had another dinner meeting and I explained everything that happened. Mm. And, you know, she said that she said, well, that's not your fault. She's like, I gave that money to your manager because I believed in you. Mm-hmm. And I believed in what God, I believe God told me to do that. I heard God in my heart tell me to give you $40,000 and I obeyed. And so if he did what he did, that's on him. That's not on you. And she said, if you ever need anything else, call me. Mm-hmm. And I said, wow. Okay. Well, you know, that was a really, you know, cool ending to that in that regard, but this is where it got even a little more wild. 2 weeks after that manager did what he did, I got contacted randomly out of nowhere by a gentleman who said, hi, Harmony. My name is such and such. And I really like your music and I like what you stand for. I've actually been following you on social media for the last 7 years. I just haven't reached out. So somebody was stalking me and watching me.
For 7 years, man.
For seven years.
Put that in perspective. I've been with my wife for 8 years.
So like, yeah, pretty much almost your whole marriage. Somebody's been watching me. And he said, I've been watching you for the last 7 years, ever since the release of your music video, If I Go Away. Thank you, brother. Thank you. And I really would like to offer you an opportunity. I am a producer and a director, and I'm getting ready to execute a movie starring Lawrence Fishburne and Milo Gibson, who is Mel Gibson's son. And I would like to hire you to write the main title track for the movie. And at first, you know, when somebody approaches you out of nowhere like that, it almost seems, you know, unreal. And,
yeah. Especially when you mention the names you've just mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so I'm kind of like, you know, I'll tell you what I really did. What I really did in that moment was I unqualified myself. God qualified me and I unqualified me. I think we do that a lot. I'm going to preach that in an event I go to. I was given an opportunity and I didn't believe that the opportunity was real because I didn't feel like I was qualified to do that title track.
That kind of like the imposter syndrome thing that people talk about where, you know, like when I'm only using my examples because it's the only way I can kind of relate it, like getting the opportunities that I've had since I've done the charity song, I feel like I don't deserve it because I'm just, as you would say in America, like, you know, suburban white dad. What, you know, like one of the stereotypical, you know, I've got a wife, the two kids, like the 9-to-5 job, what I do all right. Like my boys are safe and comfortable. That's the main thing. But getting to have these opportunities, like speak to like such people like yourself, which is unbelievably humbling and an honor for me. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart, buddy. I really do. I don't feel like I deserve it because I'm just this weird fat ginger guy. So is it that kind of way that you were like, okay, So why is Lawrence Fishburne one need to write a track like for the movie that he's going to be in? Kind of like that, or was it a bit more like, were you more looking at it from the spiritual side of like God's qualified you and then you've unqualified yourself to get that bit of perspective? Did that make sense, or did I sound like a stoner?
No, all of it made sense, every single last bit of it. And to be honest, I think where my head was at that moment, you know, God knew what I needed. Let's just say that God knew what my manager had just did to me. Because remember, we're only talking 2 weeks out, 2 weeks from a huge theft, a knife in the back from somebody that I've been doing business, running with, praying with, going to church with for 8 years.
Again, okay. Same length as my marriage.
Yeah. So 2 weeks after that dramatic experience happens, I get contacted by somebody who God ordained to change everything in my life for the good. And I, in that moment, I just didn't believe that it was real, because I felt in my heart, like, why? There's so many artists that they could hit up. There's so many celebrities they could call. There's so many people that is way more famous and qualified than me. Why would anybody call me? And the truth of the matter is, God wanted me to have that opportunity. And that's why it happened. And so after conversing with the gentleman and going back and forth and chatting, I decided that I would say yes. And I took the opportunity. And that I wrote the song, and I wrote the song titled "This Changes Everything." It was like a prophetic declaration, even to my own future, in the title, that this opportunity for this movie is going to change everything. And it did.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm very confident my manager, you know, felt like he shot himself in the foot really bad, considering that it happened so quickly right after that had taken place.
I think it's more likely that he's blown his own leg off. That's how much of a missed opportunity he's had here.
it just wasn't good, man. Yeah. And so from that situation, I was brought on. I wrote the main title track for Lawrence Fishburne's movie, which just hit 55 movie theaters in America across 17 states on June 4th, 2021. And now is in Target and Walmart and all major, you know, retail stores, available on DVD, and it's also available online. And my
title of the movie, just for people over on our side of the pond?
It is available, I believe, now in the UK as well. I believe that it was either in theaters there or it's at least available online. But it should be available now for you guys as well there. And so, you know, and they went above and beyond. They didn't just put a little snippet of my song. They didn't, a lot of times they'll just put like 15 seconds or, you know, 20 seconds, or they used 90 seconds of my song.
They use it like in the movie, and then like, and you know how somebody's the song at the end of end credits, or was it just all end credits? Do you know?
No. Yeah, I know. I went and saw myself in the movie theater. I know exactly. So
did you get to go to the premiere?
Yes. They flew me out to the red carpet premiere, and I got to perform the song live.
Wow.
And yep. And there was actually two premieres. One of them had about 4,000 people showed up. Mm-hmm. And it just really great, man. It was just great. But I went to see myself in the movie theater and the movie, and you know, it was really a great experience, you know, really humbling for me that I was watching, because in the beginning of the movie, they not just played my song for about 90 seconds, opening the opening sequences of the movie, you know, for the most part.
Nice.
They gave me my own title credit in the beginning. So it says on the screen in big letters, "Harmony," underneath in quotes, "This changes everything." So wow. They gave me an opening credit and my music in the beginning of the movie. Then they played my entire song in the end credits, and it put my name in the credits in the end as well.
Man. Well, I have to do a Wayne's World here. We're not worthy. We're not worthy. My imposter syndrome is like currently shooting out into the space station right now. It's unreal. Wow. This is, man, wow. That's crazy, man. Like,
you and me both.
That must have just been like stratospheric, how good it must have felt.
I can't even tell you, man. It was, you know, because in a lot of, you know, not just feeling that way because of, you know, what my manager did, but, you know, in my genre, you know, Christian hip hop, which, I mean, at this point, I don't even like, you know, for the most part, I just kind of stopped even using that title because I'm not really accepted in the genre. I never really have been. Oh, well, there's just, you know, I'd say probably 95% of all of the heavy hitters in the genre, they do not associate with me. They don't want to do music with me. They don't want to, you know, I mean, they probably would maybe consider it now that these types of things have been happening and they've been doing it for years and years. And you know, you can count on one hand the amount of, you know, CHH artists that have had their stuff in major motion pictures. And I'm not even signed to a major label, and I'm one of them. And so, you know, so I think some people along the way started feeling a little, you know, giving me a negative eye, because they may have felt like, you know, I didn't deserve it or whatever. But a lot of the artists that I've noticed, they just don't like how I do what I do. They don't like some of the music that I write because not every other word is Jesus. You know, some like the song Champion, for example. Champion's a really great song, and it's right now it's my most
Champion listened is absolutely to. Amazing. Like the chorus, the hook itself, like the ending, what like, is so anthemic as well. What like, just makes you want to like, to rise up. Like, yeah. And may not have Jesus in it. It's got God in it. Well, that's just the way that God made me. Mama gave birth to a champion. Man, what I was listening to it in my work. It got me through a really tough day with my shift. Thank you for that, man. I really appreciated it. It was fire. It was absolute fire, as the kids say these days.
That's why I write it, man, is to be a blessing to people. And I got a lot more music coming up the pipe, trust me.
Right. Well, that brings me on to what the best part. Right, upcoming projects, where we can fit, where everybody this side of the pond can find you. We have got to spread the word of Harmony, man. We've got to spread it. Listening to your story alone, it's just been so, it's such a humbling experience. I'm so happy that you gave up a portion of your day to speak to me. I really am. Let's spread the word, buddy. The floor is yours.
Totally my pleasure, man. It's been an honor talking with you too, brother. I really like you, man.
Thank you. So
right now, so from the Lawrence Fishburne movie spun quite a few things. I was brought on to write a track for a movie called Bad Folks, which is on my Spotify now. It's titled Bad Folks. I was also brought on to write a song for a movie called Texas Kill City. The song is titled Texas Kill City. That's also available online. And I recently had got hired to write for Wesley Snipes' upcoming movie called Outbreak Z. And I'm in the process.
Wade, oh my God! I think I've hit Saturn. This is unreal. Oh my God! Lawrence Fishburne, Wesley Snipes in the same podcast. Jesus. Sorry. Anyway, continue.
It's exciting. Yeah, man. I know. I feel the same way. It's exciting for me too, because you know, when you just come from where I come from, and you know, you're called the names that I was called, and you're told the things that, you know, you won't be and the things that you can't do and all the limitations that people put on you because of, you know, where you are currently in life. You know, when I sat in that movie theater, man, I kind of felt maybe a sense of the feeling kind of maybe how Justin Bieber or somebody like that, you know, really huge bait, have felt when they first got that big break or that big thing. It's like, it's a feeling. It can't be copied and it can't be falsely duplicated. Like something at that magnitude magnitude has to actually happen for a person to understand what that feeling is. It's not just joy. It's not just being happy. It's a feeling that you can only understand if something like that actually happens. And so when I had, felt that, it was just life-changing, brother. Mm. And so moved on from there. Right now I'm working on a soundtrack. I'm finishing up a soundtrack to an upcoming project. I don't have permission to really talk about it that much, but there is potential that Morgan Freeman may be a part of the project. We don't know yet. I know that he's looking over the script, but it's possible. If not, there'll still be, some good people in there, and I have the title track for it regardless. So that's really powerful. I'm excited for it. I'm getting ready to start my own viral YouTube channel. That's going to be doing short, basically short films, 10 to 12 minutes long, that are based on inspirational stories and messages and things of that nature. I'll be starting that probably here in the next 3 months or so and really pushing that heavy. We have a really hardcore, heavy hitting team, that specializes in building platforms like that. And I'm pretty confident we'll reach 1 million subscribers in less than a year. I'm almost guaranteed to it. So that's one of the things we're working on. I'm getting ready to finish up 3 to 4 new tracks, including that one soundtrack I was just telling you. Mm-hmm. And I'll be releasing them over the next few months. And one of the bigger things is that in August 2020, after I flew to Switzerland, I was out there filming with Luis Mandalore and Costas Mandalore for an upcoming movie titled Smokers. Champion is the soundtrack for that movie.
Brilliant.
And yes, that is one of the title tracks for the movie. And when I got back from Switzerland in January 2020, that's when COVID and all that started happening. Kobe Bryant passed away in the car, in the helicopter crash. Mm. Just there, I was actually in Switzerland when that crash happened.
Wow.
Woke up to the news. And anyway, fast forward to August 2020. One of the guys on set of the Smokers movie had contacted me through WhatsApp and said, "Hey, man, didn't you say that you live in Texas and, this area or whatever?" And I said, "Yeah, I do." It's crazy you remembered that. And he said, "Well, I got a really good friend of mine who's a big Hollywood director and producer who's going to be in Dallas, this weekend, and I'd like to set you guys up for a lunch meeting. I think that you guys would hit it off." And, I said, "Totally, I'd love to do that, So, long story short, we had a meeting in the same atmosphere that was with the Barbara meeting was in that meeting. So I was almost kind of expecting something. I just didn't know what it was going to be or how, was he going to offer me a soundtrack? Was he, was he going to ask me to be an actor or I don't know, but.
You just had a good feeling about the meeting.
Yep. Yep. It was pretty much a duplicated feeling as the one that I felt with Barbara. I recognized the two. Mm. And, so he began asking me a lot of questions about my life, just like Barbara did. For about 3 hours, just like Barbara did. At the end, he said, "Well, Harmony, I'll tell you something. Ever since the movie 8 Mile came out with based on Eminem's life, that was one of my favorite movies and still is. I've always loved it, and I loved how it was executed, and I love the story behind it. The only thing that I wish was different was that Eminem wouldn't have given himself all the glory and man would have gotten the glory and, him this and him that. I wish God would have gotten the glory. And since I watched that movie, I've always wanted to come across an individual who had a really crazy story like Eminem that I could do a movie about. And your story is the answer to my prayer. I would like to offer you a movie contract based on the life story of Dominic Bond Sr., also known as Harmony. And I would like to send you a contract next week. Look it over, send it to your lawyer. We can go kind of back and forth until we come to an agreement. But if you're willing, I would like to send you, a contract to look over." And I was amazed. Didn't really know.
You're majorly sneaky. Well, I dropped that at the start of the podcast saying, your life had to be made into a documentary movie. You just saved it and we spun, boom, right back. We done a 180, bam. You Oh man, I am so pleased for you, mate. I really am. Congratulations. Look.
Thank you, Andrew.
I mean, I was when you told me your story, I was like, this is a cross between, like, you wrote stuff for Breaking Bad, you wrote stuff for The Wire. Well, because it's what there were so many like things that as on our side of the pond, we couldn't possibly comprehend. We only see them in the glorified like what American TV shows and that, but to meet someone that's not only lived through it but survived it and ascended and in some ways transcended to this plane of existence that very few of us can actually grasp. I mean, actually to have the feeling of touching the Lord and Savior, I mean, man, most people would give everything that they have to just have that. You're truly inspirational, man. I'm so humbled to have got to speak to you. Thank you so much for your time.
It's an honor. And my pleasure as well. That gentleman just finished wrapping up his last movie, which was Nicolas Cage's first Western movie.
Cannot be about Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. So he just finished up that one. And now I'm waiting, for the time when, because there's several movies that are in line, and mine, just has to wait until that happens. But we already came to an agreement. We have the contract, everything is signed, settled, and sealed, lawyers stamped, approved, everything's good. So now it's just a waiting period till that gets executed. And so
You've got a son and a daughter, I believe. Your son just turned 16?
16, yeah. Daughter just turned
16. Is he going to do an Ice Cube and play a younger version of you in the movie?
I thought that would have been a really great idea, but the director and producer said that most likely he's going to cast stars that are way more known so that when the movie does get released, it has a much bigger push.
Having a cameo or something
probably something. it's my boy, so he did take away the opportunity for me to do any casting. He said that I wouldn't have any permission to say who or who couldn't be in the movie. And he had a good reason for it. He had actually experienced that before and had a deal with another gentleman who was had a really incredible story, and offered him a contract, and they did the movie, and the movie turned out just absolutely crap and terrible, and they lost so much money because he gave the person the authority to cast people he wanted in the movie. And when you have that kind of power, everybody comes out the woodworks, people that can't act for nothing, your cousins, your uncles, your mom, your friend, your ex-girlfriends, girls that just want to be your girlfriend, like all this stuff happened. And so he was a lot of people were in the movie acting that could not act. It was terrible. It fell through the roof, and so he learned that lesson big time. And at that time he just said, from that point on, it's going to be up to professional casting directors to actually cast everybody from the main to the medium to the extras. And so, which I understood, I wasn't, against that. And I actually didn't want the weight of that anyway, because I know so many people, how many people would come to me and say, Harmony, put me in the movie. And if I didn't put them in the movie, they'd be like, man, you're a hater. Why are you hating on me? I'm supposed to. So I'm glad that I got stripped of that ability, because I don't even want that responsibility. Leave it to the pros to do that. Let them do their thing. And I'll just, execute my part. And so.
I get that, man. Well, that's a perfectly justifiable explanation on his part.
Yeah,
definitely. Wow, that's unreal. I am so pleased for you, man. You're such a genuine nice guy. I'm so glad that I've got to meet you. At this point in your life where things are going so well for you. The only thing that I really asked for was your time and your story. And you've provided way more than I could ever imagine.
You can keep all this, even for future stuff, bro. As my career begins to ascend, you can come back.
Don't worry, I'll be looking out for in the speech you go. Yeah, and I want to thank this random ginger guy from Scotland that just let me tell him how great my life is, But I really appreciate it, brother. I really do. Thank you. I mean, don't get me wrong, we'll have some more interactions and I'll be able to get that accent down better. It takes me, what, two or three tries to get up. So that was the first attempt. I'd say that was only me about 50%. So well, I hang my head in shame with that one.
Well, I think you're brilliant, brother.
Well, thank I think you. You're brilliant, thank man. You so much. Well, it's been an absolute honor and a privilege. Well, I'll sign off just now. Because over here it's 5 to 10 at night. That's almost an hour past my bedtime with
wow.
kids.
Okay.
Well, as you know, raising kids is one of the best responsibilities in the world. But yep. What advice would you give to someone who is maybe listening to this right now, and let's say their mental health isn't exactly on point, but it's maybe dipped a bit, and they're just need to find that one thing to laser focus to keep them going. When it was me when I wasn't well, it was my kids and my wife. When it was yourself, it was coming to Christ. What advice would you give for them to find that laser focus?
Well, first of all, it's okay to not be okay. A lot of people feel like, you know, they're not allowed to be okay because the culture tries to paint this picture of you got to have all this money, and by the time you're this age, you have to have this house and you have to have this car and you got to, you know, have the white picket fence. And if you're not, then, you know, you're not really cool, or you're not really hip, or you're not really with it. You know, you're a nobody. The culture tries to make you feel like you have to be this thing by this age at this time, or you have no worth or value. And what I've come to realize is the culture is very backwards. You know, if you get your first house when you're 25, great. If you don't get your first house until you're 50, great. It doesn't matter if you work at McDonald's or you work on Wall Street. It doesn't matter. As long as you're happy. A lot of people will try to inject their own opinions to infect how, you know, they think you should be happy because of this X, Y, and Z. But a lot of times, other people's opinions really don't matter unless they're actually valuable to enhance and better your life. You don't want to shut out everybody's, you know, opinions or constructional criticism that could actually benefit you. But people who are negative and try to force you into being this person that you're not, or force you into being into a mold that you don't fit right now, you know, always X those comments and those people out. Go at your own pace. If you need help, consult God. Ask him. Just, Lord, help me. Please give me wisdom. Guide my steps. I mean, he's there 24 hours a day. He is your ever-present help in time of need. And if you don't understand, if it doesn't matter, just talk to him. Just talk to him. Ask him for help. Ask him to send you the right people. Ask him to help you get rid of the people in your life that you don't need in your life, that are toxic to your future. You know, if you need a better job, ask him for a better job. Ask him for a promotion. Ask him to show you things and perspective that can help you advance in your life, because the truth is, God loves you. Jesus wants you blessed. He wants you saved more than anything. He wants you to have resources and money in the bank. He wants you to be successful, and he wants you to be a light to other people. So when you need help and you're going through some things, or you need direction, the best person to ask is the one who gives it all. Ask God. Listen to music that encourages you. Talk to friends like Andrew. Hit him up. Andrew, I need somebody to talk to. He'll know that, because at one point in his life, he needed somebody to talk to. He was in a downtime, you know? And together, there's strength in numbers, guys. When we build each other up, when we stick together, when we encourage each other, when we're there for each other, that, my friends, is the one thing that is even better than money. It's more important than money. Money comes and goes, but relationships, strong relationships, bring opportunities to make money. Strong relationships bring opportunities for people to grow and to advance. And, you know, at the end of the day, man, you can't call money to come and save you out of predicament, but you can call a faithful friend who'll get up at 3 a.m. to come and bail you out of jail, or come and help you if you know, whatever the case is. So that would be my advice, guys, is really consult God on everything, because he's there 24. It doesn't make no sense why we wouldn't talk to him, why we wouldn't communicate, you know? And, my little daughter right here, she kind of hanging. Say hi before we go. Yeah. Say hi.
Hi. Hello.
Andrew.
Hello. How are you?
She's doing good, man. She put up her thumb, like, thumbs up. I'm good.
Oh, brilliant. What? Not only did I get to speak to you, I got to see your lovely daughter as well. Yeah, she's absolutely adorable. I used to absolutely hate kids until I had my own. So yeah, that's how much they turned my life around. Final thing. I always like to give the guest asking me a question, any question at all. Nothing's off the table. Even your daughter could ask. Why not? Well, any question that you want to ask me.
You?
Yeah. But any question?
No, I want to ask you. Yeah. I would ask this. What is it right now in your life, right now in this very moment, that you feel like you need to help you get to the next level?
My family. My two boys, my wife. They're the constant joy, the thing that gets me out of bed in the morning, the thing that in my head, if ever that wee demon in my head is going again. They're the thing that keeps me ticking over. When every second, every fibre in my being, without them, I would be lost. I love them so much. Yeah. They're who I am. They will always come first, no matter what. I would give up everything, any chance of any, like, if someone gave me like fame, instantly. But the cost was given my family. No deal, no dice. I would need them, no deal. No matter what. No deal. At all. And it's if this was before I had a wife and kids, I would have thrown them under the bus and be like, right, geez, the money. But that's how much those two little guys and my wife changed my life for the better. And I realized that last year. My Alison could have easily not taken me back in the house after I took my breakdown and said I wasn't good around the kids. And I lived with that fear for 6 weeks, and that felt like 6 decades, but she took me back in. We worked on it. She's been constant. She's been my rock. I would be lost without her, and I'd be lost without those two boys. They're every reason that I keep going. I've got big dude up there to thank for making sure that I kept going minute by minute. At some points to get back to Alison, but I genuinely believe that he's through her. He's through Alison. Sometimes to give me that test, that wee slap to get me back into the right headspace and keep me grounded, and just seeing those two boys grow and develop and shine, and it's like I'm already living in heaven just watching them. Just seeing them every day, it's a gift. I'm just so happy. I'm so happy about it. I hope that was a significant answer to the question, man.
You are blessed, my man. You are definitely blessed, brother. It's good to see that you're back in the right headspace and moving forward and connected to Mark and just everybody that you're connected to within, the family there. We're going to stay connected, brother. Feel free to reach out anytime. If you ever have any events or anything going on out there and, they need a rap artist or a speaker to come perform or to come and speak, man, I'm always available for booking. It's a little ways. So, covering flights and hotels and, stuff like that, can get a little expensive, but
you can crash my couch. It's all right.
Yeah, I will crash on your couch.
Yeah. It's a comfy couch. I crash there a lot. Not even when the wife kicks me out, more because it's just comfy.
Well, save me some room, man. Cause when I come over there to rock and roll with you guys, then I'll definitely come stay at your place, my bro.
Definitely. You'll see me with a big air horn going, the guy that worked with Lawrence Fishburne, he's here.
Yeah, we're gonna make it happen, brother. In due time,
we are indeed. I'll let you get back to your day and your beautiful family. So, to everybody listening from that Mental Ginger show that you've been listening to, myself, Andrew Durning.
Oh yeah, definitely. We are on here today listening to the amazing Andrew Durning. Make sure you guys follow him and support him and donate to his podcast. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes. You don't want to miss him because he is changing the world one podcast at a time.
You absolutely honor me. It's been my honor and privilege to have the wonderful Harmony on. Check out all of his stuff that's going on, because seriously, if you're not on this boat, you're going to regret it. This ain't no Titanic. This is going around the world in less than 80 days. So to everybody, I say take care and stay safe. Bye bye.
Blessings.
Button there.